You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
You are listening to the number one horse podcast in the world. Here is your entertaining look at the horse world and the people in it.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn McGeek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for Wednesday, December 31st, episode 3852. Happy New Year, Horse World. Well, as you know, Jamie and I are out on holiday break. We'll be back on next Monday, January the 5th. I can't believe another year has flown by again. And we're going to continue to share some HRN love in this episode. The network, as you know, has over 30 shows, Horses in the Morning being the largest show, but there are other terrific shows that you might not have had time to try. We thought on break we would share some of these shows with you. Back in 2019, a listener-turned-friend of ours, Joy, asked me if she could start a show about retired racehorses. I thought, well, you know, that was a pretty good idea. So Joy and Jamie hosted together for about a year, and then Kristen took over as co-host, and it's been rocking and rolling ever since. It's called the Retired Racehorse Radio. I asked them for their favorite episode to share with you from last year, and they both came back with one where they chatted with professional trainer and bloodstock agent Kenny McPeak on how he produces winning racehorses like Mystic Dan. Plus, they chat with Bridget from New Vocations to share a training tip and introduce you to their adorable, adoptable horse of the week. Are you ready for a chance to win some amazing horse gear? Stateline Tack is giving away thousands of dollars in prizes every single month. That's right, you can win big by just participating in their monthly giveaway. Imagine getting your hands on top quality tack, riding apparel, and all sorts of fantastic horse supplies. It's super easy to enter. Just head over to Stateline Tack's website and check out their monthly giveaway page. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to score some serious equestrian goodies. Visit statelinetack.com online today for your chance to enter to win. That's statelinetack.com. As always, use coupon code HRN to get 30% off any order of $49 or more. That's coupon code HRN for Horse Radio Network at checkout. Some products are not eligible for additional discount due to manufacturer restrictions. Those are noted in your shopping cart. Just put everything you want in your shopping cart, put HRN in, and it'll show you what you get a discount on. And now let's head over to Joy and Kristen at Retired Racehorse Radio.
This is episode 143 of Retired Racehorse Radio on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network, brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, Cashel Company, and Spalding Labs. Retired Racehorse Radio is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse, brought to you in cooperation with the Retired Racehorse Project and New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program.
We chat with professional trainer and bloodstock agent Kenny McPeak on how he produces winning racehorses like Mystic Dan and Torpedo Anna. We start off our new year chatting with Bridget Heasley from New Vocations to share a training tip and introduce you to our adoptable horse of the week. Stay tuned.
And they're off on Retired Racehorse Radio, the podcast that is your guide to the adoption, care, and training of the retired racehorse.
This is Joy Orr in Detroit, Michigan.
And this is Kristen Kovach-Bentley in Jamestown, New York, and you're listening to Retired Racehorse Radio.
Well, Kristen, it is a new year, new dawn, a new day, as some would say. And I have nothing going on, but you, my friend, have had a lot in December.
Yeah. 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 Like Shorty basically was like, oh, did you want to have a nice, relaxing December? No, you can't. So
Now tell us a jobber getting all the attention.
Yeah. Well, jobber always gets more attention because jobber's a drama queen. So, but yeah, like Shorty had this abscess for, I need to get a much better about writing these things down, at least for part of September, most of October and November.
Which is like, a long time.
That's a super long time. Like, red flag. If you have an abscess that goes on this long, you should also take the horse for x-rays, because that's what I ended up doing. If it comes on, looks like an abscess, you know, horse is dramatically lame. You wrap, you soak, you do the thing. Horse comes sound. sometimes the abscesses reabsorb. So like that didn't offend me the first time. Second time, I was like, oh, that's really annoying. So wrapped, soaked, did the whole nine yards, reabsorbed slash went away. Now, my old mentor had a theory sometimes that abscesses sort of can move around the foot. So sometimes the horse will get lame. The abscess will kind of like find another pocket, takes the pressure off, horse comes sound, then the abscess continues to grow, horse goes lame again. So I was like, okay, we must just be on this weird, like it's reabsorbing or it's finding a new pocket, like it's fine. And then it came on the third time and it like really lingered the third time. And I was like, all right, this is annoying. And like, you know, I sent you the pictures, like the whole front of the foot was starting to look weird. I was like, this is a doozy of an abscess. So made an appointment. It is really inconvenient where we live. I need to go 2 hours away to get to a vet with an x-ray. So took a day off work, loaded the horse up, brought my mom along because she just moved up here. And she's like, I've never been to an equine clinic. This will be great. I was like, super, hop in the truck. Let's go.
Fine.
Yeah, we made a little day of it, ate a bunch of junk food on the road. It was fun. we needed all of us to hold Shorty up once he was sedated because he's like absolutely impossible to get x-rays of because he's like, I can't put my foot on the block. So then, you know, it's like a whole thing. So we had multiple techs, mom, me, like he put his head in a windowsill. It was a great day at the clinic. And the things you don't want to hear when the vet is x-raying the foot is like, ooh, this is a good one. You're like, oh, no, no. No, I don't want a good one. Like, that's not good. So he had this abscess tract that like went around the foot. You know, normally it's like a couple dots, like a couple little shadows that you'll see on your x-ray. And he had like a full on, like a worm line, like going around the foot. And I was like, ooh, that's not good. And then, you know, so she took a ton of images, which was helpful. Cause she was initially concerned that there was coffin bone involvement, which, it can go one of two ways. It's either, this is like a lot of Googling I've done, either I think it's pedal bone osteitis or osteomyelitis, which is an infected bone. And that needs to be removed if that's the case. So you can remove up to 25% of the horse's coffin bone and the horse can still like return to soundness. So that's where I thought we were headed. So she's like, there's nothing to do about it now. Just let this abscess drain. I'm going to send these x-rays to Ohio State, which is, you know, my preferred like escalated clinic. They did Jobber's tumor removal a couple of years ago. So she sent those off to OSU. OSU was like, yeah, this doesn't look good. So we went in mid-December, dropped him off, took x-rays. The x-rays actually looked better. So the vet, Dr. Kelleher, I need to try to get her on because this whole episode was so fascinating of my life. she was like, okay, the x-rays actually look good to suggest that there's not coffin bone involvement, but definitely the coffin bone is getting deformed. So like something weird is going on in here. So they did a CT the next day, which this is the first time I've ever had a horse that I owned needed to go under general anesthesia. So that was like a little nerve wracking just because, you know, that's a risky procedure. They did the CT and they found a keratoma, which is a benign tumor in like the keratin of the foot. So like, who knew that horses could even do that? So she found it like super small, super early days, which was great because they can really be a problem if they grow. Yeah. So she was able to get that removed. So that's where we are today, is that because we are recording a little bit early. So we are recording like mid-end December. So as of today, he came through that procedure and I'll pick him up and I'm going to take him down to a friend in Kentucky to do his 30 days of stall rest because he will be absolutely heinous if I try to do that at home. And she's a very nice barn. I feel like
he will not follow the rules at home.
No, he will like jump over the wall. He'll kill himself. Like it just, it's not.
Sounds like not the holiday spirit.
No. So I am happy to invest a little extra money to send him to a friend who is extremely experienced, has a lovely facility. He's going to have a friend who's their teaser stallion named Pancake. Like it's a great, he's going to have a little
like, honestly,
Christmas vacation.
Some would call it summer camp, but his is like a winter camp, winter boarding school.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. I mean, he's probably going to be a little wild when he comes back, but like he's staying in their foaling barn. So he's going to be in like a double wide,
comes back too civilized and he's like, this barn is not what I.
Yeah, just he's going to be like, wait a minute.
Like his nose will be when so he gets high turned back out again.
Yeah. So I would love to get Dr. Kelleher on to talk about keratomas because I know they are fairly uncommon, but I've seen them, you know, in enough equestrian groups on Facebook, like, you know, it's a thing that people deal with and it's definitely a thing to know about. So, if anyone else is like listening and they're like, my horse has had an abscess and I'm panicking, like the red flags here were abscess that came and went, that like never burst and never went away and went on for weeks. I mean, truthfully, yeah, like weeks. So there was enough soundness time in between the abscesses that that alone didn't give me a red flag to like take him in, you know, the end of October. I was like, well, I think it's just moving around the foot. So it was like, it was the third time where I was like, it's time to go to the vet.
Yes. So that's definitely unusual abscess behavior.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, if you are listening and you're like, well, I have a vet, like my vet comes out all the time with a mobile x-ray unit, like less, go ahead, get those x-rays. It is much harder for me here to have to like haul him that far. So it is just inconvenient enough that I can't just like whip him up there for x-rays at the drop of a hat. So yes. So that is the other reason I was like, we're gonna first aid this thing as long as I can until I'm not comfortable anymore. And that's kind of where we got to. So
well, here's to hope. I mean, we'll have a good idea because he may be getting close to coming home by the time this episode airs.
I hope so. We'll
have some good, yeah, shorty updates by that time, but definitely hoping for a speedy recovery for him and like maybe a cocktail for you or two.
Yeah, I think I might have a bourbon tonight because I have done a lot of driving. So I'm curious. So listeners, I need you all to weigh in. When you are doing a lot of driving with or without a horse trailer, you know, I was coming home with a trailer empty. So I wasn't like quite as, I don't want to make it sound like I'm a reckless driver, but I wasn't like driving as like, okay, there's a horse in the trailer, have to change lanes very smoothly.
That precious cargo, like, isn't there?
Yeah. So like the last hour to keep myself like awake, alive, and sane, it was the greatest showman sing-along hour. I'm really glad that this is our Kenny McPeak episode. We're going to have a ton of people listening in and they're like, this weirdo likes to listen to the greatest showman and sing it. But you know what? You do what you have to stay awake. That's all I'm saying. I mean, so from Erie to Jamestown, it was, this is the greatest show.
Yeah,
and gotta, I want to know what our listeners listening to stay awake.
Yeah, let us know. We want to know your road trip playlist, especially those who traveled to like the makeover and stuff too.
Yeah, what, people who are driving long playlist distances. Yeah, please tell us.
And if, you know, it was a true crime podcast, like some other person who may be talking on the show, who that's what she does, it's okay too.
Listen, I tried. I had like hours of educational content lined up for myself. And by hour two, I was like, nope, back to the sad boys with guitars. Like I can't. So
hey,
I tried.
To each their own. It's not for everybody. But you know what is for everybody? This podcast. I'm super excited for it. It's going to be a good episode. As you mentioned, we have Kenny McPeak. Oh my gosh, what a fun interview, Kristen. Like he's amazing to chat with. And I feel like we had us like a celebrity on. I felt very cool about that. And we're going to have some fun questions about like how socialized is your horse with New Vocations own Bridget Heasley. So it's going to be a really fun episode. But before we dive in, we're going to hear from our premier sponsor, Kentucky Performance Products.
This Nutritional Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. One of the most common mistakes seen in feeding programs is the underfeeding of commercial concentrates. Commercial concentrates are textured or pelleted feeds that provide energy, protein, vitamins, and minerals. Some common manufacturers are Triple Crown, Nutrina, Purina. You get the idea. Every commercial feed has a minimum amount you must feed in order to meet a horse's daily vitamin and mineral requirements. For most commercial concentrates, that level is somewhere between 4 to 6 pounds per day. A lot of horses will get too fat consuming feed at that level, so owners and barn managers feed less, and rightly so. It's not healthy for a horse to get too fat. However, if you are feeding less than the recommended minimum amount to your horse, you are not providing your horse with adequate nutrition. Microphase Vitamin and Mineral Supplement from Kentucky Performance Products can solve your problem. Microphase can be added to the diet as needed to fill in the nutritional gaps. Packed with nutrients but low in calories, you can adjust the feeding level of Microphase to meet your horse's requirements. Learn more about Microphase by visiting kppusa.com. Got questions about your feeding program? We can help. Email Karen at questions@kppusa.com or call us at 859-873-2974.
Joy, I'm really excited to kick off our 2025 season with a very cool guest. We have with us Kenny McPeak today, who is a thoroughbred trainer who almost needs no introduction. I don't think anybody in 2024 had a better year than Mr. McPeak. So, Kenny, thank you so much for joining us on Retired Racehorse Radio. We're super excited to pick your brain today.
My pleasure.
So, yeah, I'm going to just jump right into it. Like, your 2024 was incredible. I mean, you're what is it, the third trainer to hit the Derby Oaks like double in one weekend?
Yeah, pretty elite company, I suppose. Haven't really thought much about it going into it, but you know, it's hitting me. I guess the older I get, the more I appreciate it. But you know, I had been kind of around the board in both races. I had been second three times in the Oaks. And I had been second in the Derby, and I'd had the favorite in the Derby, but to win them both in the same year was pretty amazing.
And that is wild. Yeah.
Two wonderful horses, by the way. That's
of course.
You know, that's what matters, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's what, you know, I want to talk a little bit, you know, like obviously those are incredible horses, but you know, you've gone on the record calling those working class horses, which I think is really a neat way to think about them. So like, tell us a little bit more about that, you know, like, were these, you know, bred to be Derby winners? Or, you know, when you say working class, what does that mean?
Well, let's start with the filly. The filly Torpedo Anna was by a stallion that really everybody kind of turned their back on. And what I specialize in is going to horse sales and what I call plucking out the best physical individuals and then putting them in a program that gives them a chance to excel. And she is a freak. I mean, she's ultra smart, ultra talented. She's done things that I've never had a filly do. And I've had some fantastic fillies in my career. But she's next level. And then, and she only costs $40,000 as a yearling. So she's been a bargain buy, and the ownership group has really enjoyed this whole experience. And a lot of people throw a lot of money at these things, and it's not. In her case, she was just a modestly priced yearling filly that looked the part, and she is the part. And then in Mystic Dan's case, you know, his mother was very workmanlike. She was a good, solid filly that every time she ran, she would run hard. I bought her for the client and knew her well. And then when she came off the racetrack, I encouraged him to breed her. I said, she's the kind of filly that's going to give you consistency. And of course you need that in racing horses. You need horses that you know what you're going to get. And then I said, if you breed her to something faster than her, then you may have a real chance of having a pretty good brood mare. And then I made the decision to breed her to Golden Sense, which is the sire line is Harlan's Holiday. And I had trained Harlan's Holiday. And not only was he fast, he was consistently fast. And bred to her, she's produced a Kentucky Derby winner, Mystic Dan. So that's a homebred product. He was conceived at Magdalena. He was foaled at my farm in Lexington. We raised him, broke him, trained him, and then obviously won with him. And so it's been a real, you know, as horsemanship and as the process of handling horses, it's been real magical.
I love that. And this is something that, you know, has always struck me. You know, I watch a lot of racing, you know, I go to the track when I can, you know, read a lot of articles about racing, and it does tend to, you know, I see that trainers kind of follow these families, you know, where like either you have a direct hand in the breeding of these horses, or people know, you know, like, oh, you work well with Harlan's Holiday and that, you know, line. So how does that work? You know, like, do you find a lot of similarities like through the generations as, you know, you kind of work with like generation after generation of horses?
You know, I'm an outlier. I'm probably one of the few trainers that has real input on who the mares that I handle are bred to.
Oh, interesting.
I'm very involved. I like to tell my clients, you know, give them my strong opinions, which, you know, sometimes they're strong opinions, but I believe in breeding horses. And I was raised around the breeding industry. I was raised in Lexington, and I did my first horse deal when I was 19, a sophomore in college, a broodmare deal, actually. And then over the years, having looked and analyzed at a lot of horses and how they're made and how they're bred, and you know, whether it's the propensity for speed or stamina or turf or dirt. You know, I think there's a method to the madness, you know, like I think that there's, you know, there's a real pattern. Like I advise clients on a regular basis, look, you don't breed a wine glass to a beer bottle. You breed a wine glass to a wine glass and you know you're going to get a wine glass. If that's kind of a silly analogy.
I love it.
It works though. Yeah.
Yeah. But horses are made, you know, there are, and actually if you also use the analogy, there's big dippers and little dippers and horses that are bigger and rangier and there are horses that are small and typier. And you have to do, you know, like in his case, in her case, they were smaller, typier horses and bred together. You got a really predictable foal out of it. And, but I love doing that. I mean, I've been a student of pedigree and confirmation since I was a boy, and I still am learning every day.
Oh, that's cool. So, I mean, do you find then like personality wise, like, you know, obviously breeders are always selecting for physical traits when they, you know, make selections, but do you find like personality wise, you know, like a particular sire line, like that's a pretty gritty kind of horse, or like that's, you know, maybe a little bit of a flightier horse. That horse is a little tricky. Like, do you find, you know, kind of families work that way?
Personality comes from the mother. I think that the mother's influence over the foal is so much more important than the sire. And you want a sire that contributes a speed factor, but the mare for me really produces the class factor. And I think that the mentality of Ma'am, who is the mother of Mystic Dan, was what really attracted me to her, because she was so consistent and professional and easy to handle. And you need that. And I don't know that, like, all the good ones that I've really been around were typically that way. I think there's this misconception that thoroughbreds are flighty and that they're difficult. Some can be, but for the most part, I think if you give them a consistent environment, they're very easy to handle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting, 'cause, you know, from the equestrian side of it, we tend to look for sire lines just because they're more recognizable, you know? So, like I really like everything from Candy Ride and Gun Runner, and like those are ones that I'm looking for as a Western rider, because they have a very, like, a good hip that reminds me of a quarter horse, you know. So that's just as an example. But, you know, you'll have people that swear like Kitten's Joys make great adventures, you know. So from the equestrian side, we do tend to be drawn to the sire lines, I think, but that's, you know, largely just because they're more recognizable. And I think your average off the track buyer doesn't get to know a whole lot about the dam at all. So it's interesting to hear it from the others.
Pay more attention to the broodmare sire.
Mm-hmm.
Sire is a bigger influence than the sire. And And in the case of Torpedo Anna, she's out of an Uncle Mo mare. And Uncle Mo, obviously extremely talented horse, but he's an excellent broodmare sire. And right. And then you can even look down into the second dam sire and that be important. So I probably put more emphasis on the broodmare sire, or the mare and her family, as opposed to the sire. And that's where I've been able to buy value at auction. So I don't get enamored with, you know, whether who they're by, in the sense that when you win a race, nobody cares who they're by or who they're out of when you win. You just want to win. And a lot of people put too much emphasis on the pedigree, and they'll really overpay for pedigree, where sometimes horses need to make their own pedigree, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I like Torpedo Anna is such a great example of that. You know, is Fast Anna even standing anymore? Is he?
No, he died.
Okay.
Well, look at, I can go back to Take Charge Lady, a filly that I trained in the early 2000s. Her pedigree was literally blank. There was no stakes winners in the first, second, or third dam when I bought her. And today she's a blue hen mare, and that whole family is nothing but grade one, grade two, grade three black type. And so you're trying to see, well, the physical out for me out weighs the paper, because paper is, it doesn't run, but the physical runs. And then if you get a horse that the physical's there, then it's up to them to do it out on the race course. And that's really, that's the ultimate challenge as a horseman, is to be able to see all that.
Well, yeah, that was gonna be my next question, you know, is like, these things don't happen, like, you know, a Take Charge Lady as an example, right? Like, she couldn't have just ended up in anyone's hands. and maybe turned into the same thing, right? So, you know, like what is your job then as the horseman and the trainer to bring that out?
Okay, well, not to discount what we do, but there are a long list of very talented trainers in North America that don't ever get quality horses. And as a young trainer, I wasn't getting quality horses. I was working extremely hard trying to make slow horses run fast. And then at some point in time, I said, I really need to figure out how to find faster horses. And once you do that, then you kind of go next level. But you're only really a reflection of the quality of the horses that you're handling. And I do think that the list of thoroughbred trainers in the United States might be 500 deep that are perfectly capable of training a Torpedo Anna or Take Charge Lady. Mystic Dan, I think we did an exceptional job with. I mean, and you have to do that and prove that. But that comes with years of experience, and you know, you've obviously got to get results for your clients or you won't stay in business. But ultimately, a good horse is dangerous in anybody's hands if they keep it simple and do the right thing by the horse. And, you know, look, typical, you know, just make sure they're wormed, make sure their teeth are done regularly, make sure they're eating well, that they're fed well, that they're walked regularly, that they're doted over. I think you need to surround yourself with positive energy. I think positive energy is a really big deal in a stable. People that bring negative energy to my barn, I eliminate like cancer. I think that's very important. And then it's a matter of keeping it simple and keeping it steady, uncomplicated.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's a solid approach to horsemanship in any discipline, I think.
Yeah.
It's something we should all be aspiring to, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. So now, okay, so looking at your, you know, 2024 record, I think, you know, it's easy to be like, wow, what a successful year. But like, how do you define success as a trainer or a horseman?
Well, the harder part is the horses that can't run. Now, I've got horses for every Torpedo and Mystic Dan, there's 8 or 10 horses that are average, but we have to do every bit as good a job with those horses to make sure that they're well handled and raced in the correct level, correct distance, correct surface. And then for the horses that can't run, you know, we have to help with the exit strategy on the ones that can't run. And that's where, you know, your topic comes in, is we have to figure out how to rehome that horse. We have to make sure that they're retired sound. We do a lot of that at our two facilities, the one in Kentucky Magdalena and the one in Florida called Silverleaf Hills. And it's not unusual for us to have horses out in paddocks that we're looking to rehome that have bowed tendons. And so we help with all that. So like, if you look at my win percentage, I don't really put much emphasis in it, but there are those that do, especially the gamblers. My win percentage isn't spectacular in 2024, but I've also handled the average horses with as much commitment as I have the good ones. And you have to do that. And that means running an average horse and in some cases losing races and trying to figure out how to sell that horse and get it in the hands of somebody that can actually win some races that what I'd call a B or a C or a lower level circuit. So those horses still win races as well.
Yeah, right.
They don't have to be in my hands. They can still be successful at the right spots.
Well, and I think that's an interesting lesson too, to think about, you know, coming from that equestrian perspective, because I think there's this mentality of like, you know, you have to be the forever home, and that's not always a good fit, you know, for someone who just owns one or two horses for fun, you know, like that's, I think, part of horsemanship is knowing like, this horse is not in the best place with me. It needs to go somewhere else.
Well, we try to win races at the Keenelands and the Churchills and, you know, the top level tracks, Saratoga, here at Fairgrounds, Oaklawn, Gulfstream. But there's plenty of horses that need to run at, you know, Louisiana Downs or Finger Lakes or Belterra, Tampa, a lot of those other tracks. And they need horses to fill races too. And those trainers need those horses. So it's a fine line that you have to walk in. And in many cases, it's more work on the average horses than it is on the good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any like standouts that you can think of that are doing something cool in a second career?
Oh, goodness. Yeah. A long list of them. You know, my daughter's a 3-day eventer, and she has retired a list of horses. There's a horse named Blue that couldn't outrun me. And Blue has been an absolute superstar. And he is just a fantastic horse for my daughter and for her friends to use. And he loves his job. And she's had a world of fun with him. And I could give you a list of others. And they end up, for the most part, end up in, you know, good spots. And we try to make sure that they don't go anyplace nefarious. But and it's a little tricky once you sell a horse or move a horse. You don't always know where they land. But I can't give you maybe one that over the years that I was disappointed in where that filly ended up. But that's hard to control everything.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I know that, you know, that can be problematic because, you know, it's so easy to go on Equibase and search the horse and be like, well, Kenny McPeak was the last trainer on record, so we got to go after him. And it's like that horse might have changed hands, you know, 3-4 times since it left your stable because, yeah, unfortunately, like you can't control what happens to them after. So, but yeah, I mean, all you can do is do what you're doing and set them up in the best possible way for success. And yeah, hope they get into the right hands. So do you ever get to ride yourself?
You know, I rode until I was in my early 40s. I'm 62 now, and I've had a bunch of foot surgeries, and I've got an L4 disc, the L5 disc, and so I don't ride at this age. So, but I used to love to. Matter of fact, when I was a young kid, I rode all the time. Actually, that kind of led me to get into horses because my grandmother would bring ponies to the house after church when I was single digits, and I went to church with her, and then I would go to the races with my grandfather on my mom's side. So I was pretty well obsessed when I was a boy. And then I learned how to read a pedigree and the racing form before I was 10 or 11. Although today I'm not a gambler. I don't bet. I'm really more of a student of looking at horses. And I'll bet on a horse and buy a horse before I'll bet on a race.
I love that. Yeah. I used to catch flack because I would be watching, I guess, what was TVG at the time, you know, as a kid, and people would be like, why are you watching that? And I was like, because I like to watch the horses. I'm not a gambler. Yeah. I'm 12, you know. So that's funny how many of us get into it that way. Oh, that's awesome.
Go ahead. I was going to tell you how you look at horses is look at them like constellations in the sky. So some horses are little dippers, and you can say there are points of reference on a horse that you can look at to see how they're made. And some of them are bigger, longer, shorter legs, longer necks. I mean, hip makes the horse. And I don't care what type of horse you're dealing with, hind leg is everything. Because if they don't have a good hind end, then they struggle to do anything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. With that being kind of the motor of the horse, that makes sense. So yeah. 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 Let's talk about that a little bit more. Is there like what is the type of horse that you're always drawn to? Other than a good back end?
Well, balance, must have a nice depth of shoulder, has to have points of the hip need to be perfect. You want the point of the hip, the point of the butt, the point of the stifle, the angle of the gaskin down to the hock to the length of the hind cannon bone, the fetlock, even the angles of the pastern and the hooves. I'm huge on all that. If they don't have, like if a horse sits too far back in its hock, or they sit too far forward, or if, you know, the depth of, I mean, it's hard to explain because it's multiple points of reference. You can't just, I mean, I can try, like if I had a picture, I could show you the points, but to see it in motion, and then when you see a horse walk, you see how they utilize their hind end. And then even their hind end needs to be, the parallel movement of how they move through their hind end has to be ultra efficient. And a horse that's cow hocked or a horse that turns out badly in its fetlocks is going to affect its ability to get from point A to point B. And so when we're running a race and people say, oh, you're going to run a mile, but the truth is you're trying to figure out the inches it takes of efficiency to get there.
Right. And how much time do you have to determine this? You know, like you're at a sale and you're looking at horses. This is the fun part, right? Like, you've honed this over the years, but.
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Malcolm Gladwell?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. He's a New York Times bestselling writer. It's a really good book called Blink. And in Blink, the gist of the book is pretty simple in that there are people that have the ability to analyze the situation, determine what needs to be done, and then react. And then, like, for example, a field general in a battlefield can observe where soldiers are. They understand infantry. They understand. He can decide how his men need to approach a battle. There are people that can look at a piece of art and do it within moments and say that's real or that's fake. And with me, I look at the horse as kind of a moving piece of art in that, well, the best example was is that they had 50 or 100 different art experts had, one group had 7 seconds to look at the piece of art and the other group had 2 days. And it was a simple yes or no, real or fake. The 7 second group got it right more than the 2 day group because they get analysis paralysis. And I'm very instinctual. I see a horse, I scan it with my eyes, and then I say, that horse can run or that horse can't run. And then when you're at a horse sale, you're going to look at 400 a day.
Right.
So you better be fast. And so I'll go to a horse sale and whip right through them. And then I'll call the ones like it. It's another bad analogy. I'm going to keep throwing these at you. It's going into a singles bar with hundreds of people and you're going to get married on Monday. You better make the right decision. Right.
Right.
And you don't have a lot of time, but you've got to go through and you've got to look at this group of horses and you've got to figure out who you're attracted to, who you're not attracted to, eliminate, squeeze down the ones you're attracted to, go back and interview the ones you're attracted to again, go look again, keep going back again. And then you say to your clients, okay, we're going to bid on these 8 out of 400.
Oh gosh, that's wild.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if anybody's ever done it with me, my brain is moving and I'm physically moving and I'm like trying to come up with the right list because it's a real honor to be able to invest people's money in horses, thoroughbred horses. And I always obsessed about being right. I need to be right. I don't want to spend somebody's money haphazardly. Right. I want to buy them the best possible horse I can get my hands on. And then, of course, if I do that, then they're going to let me have more money to buy more horses the next year. And that's basically how I've ended up where I am today.
Oh, that's amazing. We need to like get a sponsored GoPro camera and just stick that on your head for a day at the sale and just like try to see what you see, listen to what you're saying. That'd be amazing. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. All right. So now before we started recording, we were chatting a little bit about this app that I had no idea was your brainchild because I've used this app before, especially as, you know, an off-track thoroughbred owner. I think it went through, you know, some changes recently, but I think a lot of us have used this app to learn more about our horses' racing histories. So tell us a little bit about the Horses Now app.
Yeah. So, I've always been concerned about the growth or lack of growth of thoroughbred racing's fan base. And through a series of events, I was with a friend of mine nearly, 14 years ago. And he said to me, I always want to follow your horses, but I don't know how. And at the time, the iPhone was just coming out and there was the apps all of a sudden became a topic. And I started studying apps and I said, well, somebody needs to build a horse racing app. Why hasn't anybody built a horse racing app? Here I am working in this business. We need to build a racing app. And then I did the math on it and called a couple of developers, checked through the industry. Nobody was building an app. And you know what? I just decided to do it. I've always been kind of a little bit ADD and I don't play a lot of golf. I'm pretty much, you know, absorbed in what I do, but I it's a passion project. And so we built it and we connected video to it and the data. And the first month we got 12,000 downloads. And today I've got over 6 million of my own money invested in the product, but we use it as a bit of a loss leader because we've had, and let me regress. Horses Now, it's on your iPhone. It's an Android iPhone app. It's easy to download. It's free. Forgive the ads, but we have to pay for our data and such like that and right. our coding. But you can get entries, results, in some cases replays. It gives you alerts for 15 minutes to post at the gate, the result, the chart. You can put in your favorite racetracks, your favorite horses, your favorite trainers, and your favorite jockeys, and you'll get notifications. And so we've managed to average 7,000 new users a month for over 10 years. And it's continued to grow. And today, I use the database to get new clients in some cases. If I want to send out an email, I've got 600,000 email addresses that I can promote our product on. And that's a pretty strong way to keep your name out there. And but it's lost money for the most part. Matter of fact, it loses anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 every month. But fortunately, I'm good at my day job. And we offset that by winning races.
There you go. You've got it worked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, you know, if that's your app, you built it, like, heck yeah, you get to send everybody an email.
Yeah, awesome. No, it's been fun. There are people, a lot of people that depend on its reliability, and there's a code writing team. And then I've got a team that does the administrative, and I'm a delegator. I've got a team that I say, hey, you handle this, handle that. And, you know, and also, you know, I manage two farms and four divisions of racehorses. So I've got my brain moving pretty quick every day. But, you know, look, I keep it calm and keep it steady. And I ultimately want to see Thoroughbred Racing figure out how to grow itself. And I still think that the Horses Now project is vital that it be successful because, you know, I'm not getting any younger, but horse racing has shrunk since I started training horses. And it's disconcerting to me that when I started training, there were 53,000 foals a year. And this year we'll be down to 17 or 16,000.
Yeah.
And so you've seen a real negative spiral in an industry that I'm really passionate about. So let's not give up quite yet. And we had a nice meeting today on some other details on trying to take it next level. Ultimately, we want to put it on Samsung television, Apple TV, Roku, Hulu, Sony TV. I'm going to tell you in the next 5 years, you'll see that.
Nice. Well, and yeah, exactly. That's the kind of growth, you know, that we need to, and anyone who's listening to this thinking like, well, this doesn't affect me. I just, you know, like my off-track thoroughbreds, like those horses have to come from somewhere. And, you know, we need the racing industry to survive for us to continue to enjoy this breed. So something that I've always said personally is that I think the off-track thoroughbred ownership market is an untapped market of racing fans. We just need to kind of bridge that gap a little bit between the people who love the horses and the industry that those horses come from.
Well, think about the economics of this. If an industry is in a negative spiral, the ones that suffer are the horses on the lower level.
Oh,
and those horses, those trainers aren't running for proper purses. And their ownerships are having a hard time paying their bills. And then if the trainer's not getting paid and the horse is not getting taken care of, then it really is the responsibility, you know, the industry do something about that. I've personally taken it upon myself that I want to see this industry get back to growing. You know, I started training at Latonia Racecourse back in 1985. It's now Turfway, but an average purse at River Downs in Latonia was $3,000. I think the first race I won in my career, it was $1,800 to the winner. I mean, I won races at Beulah Park in Ohio that were, you know, $2,500, $3,500. I mean, just the effort to drive a horse up there, run it, and bring it back, I'd come home and make $600 and thought I had a great day. I mean, how can somebody in this day and age function? And why would a young trainer want to do that with you know, that's if you win.
Right. Yeah.
What are you going to do when you lose? So we really need to figure a way to grow this sport and get the economics, not of the big tracks, but the little tracks are the ones that need the economic help. And actually, the little tracks are very cooperative with our product. The bigger tracks, I think, are more aware that we have a large user base and aren't so sure that they want to let, you know, us into any markets that we could actually make money. So that's a whole nother level of a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that Joy and I have talked about, like, oh, we should work more with the tracks, you know, and just kind of get a track input, you know, on all of this, because they have a lot of influence, you know, and we sort of overlook that. So, yeah.
Well, it needs to be easier to watch the small tracks. It's easy to watch the Churchills and the Keenelands of the world or New York racing, but it's really hard to watch the small tracks. And that's where a lot of these off-track thoroughbreds come from, is from the smaller tracks that you know, they weren't competitive, or at least their careers ended. And there really needs to be a real good system. I think they try really hard. I don't know what the system, how well the system works on getting, you know, the average horse off the average track well taken care of, but you know, look, it needs to be done.
What's interesting though is, you know, like where I live in Western New York, we're 40 minutes or so from Presque Isle Downs, which is, you know, not a top end track, but every time I go, just on some random Tuesday, there's always a crowd. Like, there's always people there. And it's interesting because I don't always see that at the bigger tracks, you know, just on the weekday, but it seems like the smaller tracks get these, like, the fans that come to watch racing, which I find really interesting.
I think there are people that love to go to the races, and really, we really need to give them more access, and the accessibility to actually touch and feel a horse is a big deal. I know that's what captured me when I was young, is being able to ride a horse, touch a horse, you know, that's really where the passion of it all comes from. But fans are out there. I think American racing, do you know that worldwide, Australian, 25% of Australians follow horse racing. In Europe, it's 15 to 20% of Europeans follow horse racing, specifically England, Ireland, France. America, we're lucky if we're 1%.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah, no, but what are we doing? What are they doing that we aren't doing? Matter of fact, it's easier to watch a race on those other countries, but we also have a lot of competition. But we don't do a good job showing the sport. And when we built the app, that was our mindset, was that if we show it, they'll come. And then they took our video away and we haven't been able to show it, but we keep sending information, and it's still growth. It's crazy.
That's wild. Well, I feel like we should have you on again just to talk about this, because I feel like we could, like, deep dive into this subject for like another hour and have a grand time. But in the meantime, so tell us where people, remind us where we can find the app itself, and then also where can people learn more about you and your program?
Well, the app is on the Google Play Store, and it's also the iPhone App Store. It's real simple, Horses Now, and it's a blue and white app. And then, actually, if you want to, for those that know how to do this, you can text the word horse to 847. You know what? I can't remember that number right now.
I was going to be super impressed. I was like, you are more techie than I am.
Four,
I know, so well done.
But anyway, it's better. It's easier to go to the App Store. But anyway, and as far as me, you know, McPeak Racing is our McPeakRacing.com. But, you know, we offer partnerships on there where people take 20% shares, and they're real good starter horses for people that have never owned a racehorse. We sell 20% shares and try to put a valuation on a horse and then offer it out to those that have never raced before. We're doing quite a few of those right now, and those are on the website. And Torpedo Anna was a Magdalena Racing offering. 2 years ago, you could have bought 20% of her for $10,000.
Oh, if only we knew then.
Yes. So anyway. That it's all fun. And I've got a great team of people. I hire a lot of older, experienced horsemen to work with me, and then that way I've got less concerns, and they know what to do every day. And then I kind of a helicopter. Right now I'm sitting at my stable at the fairgrounds here in New Orleans. I keep a home here, and it's a lovely city for those that don't know it, especially the French Quarter. But sticking my nose in here before I go home for Christmas.
Love it. Well, thank you very much for spending some time with us this evening, because I know you have lots going on. So we appreciate your time and the conversation, and we had a ton of fun. I hope you did too.
Well, good. Thanks for having me.
Cashel has been crafting top-notch products since 1986, designed to make your ride safer, more convenient, and downright enjoyable. From the Crusader Fly Mask, the ultimate fly mask, trusted by riders nationwide, to the Blanket Top Performance Felt Pad with pressed felt with merino fleece. It's like a spa day for your horse's back. To the beautiful beaded halters, adjustable, durable, and gorgeous. Visit CashelCompany.com today and gear up for the ride of a lifetime. Cashel, where quality meets the saddle.
Kristen, we've hit a new year. It is 2025, which means we get to start talking about making the makeover. But before we can get into that, people have to apply.
Yeah, they've got to get applied and they've got to get accepted first before we can put them on the podcast. But if that is not incentive enough, the Thoroughbred Makeover for 2025 has a brand new format. Instead of having the finale championship day, it's championship round Saturday. So the top 10 in every discipline will come back. But before you can get there, you do need to apply. So right now, applications are open for submission January 10th through January 24th. And you can log on at therrp.org and get that application started. If you have not already started, you can start to draft that application and save it and always come back to it, because there is a fairly extensive application process. So we do need a couple materials from you ahead of time just to make sure that you are well set up and are likely to be safe and successful transitioning a racehorse to a new career after racing or breeding. But there's plenty to do. We have plenty of sport services along the way, and it is just a great experience. If you have not been inspired yet by listening to our series, you've got to go back, listen to those Make the Makeover segments, and then you can join us for 2025. Head over to therrp.org and log in to get started. Well, Joy, in 2025, we are happy to continue our Track to Triumph series. Just as a reminder, listeners, if you would like to have your story shared on a future episode, just head to our Facebook page and click on the pinned post at the top, and that will take you to our Track to Triumph form so you can share your horse's story. Today, we have Michelle Patterson sharing the story of her horse, Tolerable, who she calls Elliot. Tolerable is an RRP makeover graduate from 2018. Yay, that's the year I did it. Graduate from 2018 in the Show Hunters and in Liberty work. So I would guess she probably did freestyle with him. After the makeover, Elliot and Michelle worked hard on his anxiety, and they were able to be successful in the 3-foot ring in the Show Hunters. Elliot now serves special needs children at Guardian Therapeutic Horsemanship in Axtell, Texas. Aww. That's a really cool story. That is definitely a Track to Triumph, and triumph comes in so many forms. So thank you, Michelle, for sharing your story.
Well, it's that time of the episode where we bring on new vocations. And today we're joined by Bridget Healsley. Welcome back to the show, Bridget.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, and happy new year. You're our first one for this year. And it's crazy to think about episode 143 of this. Like, I don't even know where the time has gone. Just bananas. But we have a listener submitted question. I thought this one was pretty interesting. So the listener mentioned that her racehorses seem to have a different level of socialization or social skills compared to her non-racing horses. Now, we didn't get to any details of what that means exactly, but I have noticed my own racehorse seems to lack understanding social skills with some of the non-racing horses. She thinks everyone wants to be her friend, and she can just rest her head on whoever she wants and get into their personal space.
I'm just going to chime in and say I only have racehorses, so I have no idea if they have good or bad social skills. It's just exactly. A clown show all the time.
So I think it'd be really fascinating, you know, like what are like the foundation social skills that these racehorses get before the track, and how can we help them socialize with their non-horsey neighbors once they move into their new homes?
Yeah. And so I'm not sure if the listener is referring to social skills within like the herd of horses at the barn or social skills with the people that they're interacting with. And we can kind of talk about both. Mm-hmm. But with both thoroughbreds and standardbreds, they are turned out with their dams their whole, you know, first year of life until it's time for them to be weaned. And then they're usually turned out in groups, weanlings and yearlings, until it's time to sail prep them and start their training for the track, sort of at the end of their yearling years. So they do, you know, just kind of live in big groups as babies. But as we all well know, the social skills of a weanling or a yearling are very different than that of a grown-up horse. And so some of them may not get turned out in groups again until after their track life, particularly, you know, thoroughbreds more than standardbreds. Standardbreds frequently come to me having time off in the off seasons, or, you know, when their particular meet isn't racing, and they'll turn them out with other horses at their farms. But a lot of racehorses, especially, you know, higher value racehorses, might get some solo turnout, but not with other horses that they're interacting in a herd situation. So their behaviors may be very baby-like. And I experience this a lot with some of the younger standardbreds that come into the program. Like, they go out and they just want to play halter tag and chase and rear and bite and
so all like of the random pasture see. Accidents aren't just like bad luck. It's honestly because they're mentally still infants.
Yeah. They, you know, they had this whole break in their, you know, sort of herd life. And so they're kind of getting reacclimated to it. And the best thing for them is, you know, starting them in a smaller group and just watching them. You know, is your horse very baby-like in his mannerisms? And maybe they need that, like, mother figure, father figure to kind of put them in their place once or twice and help teach them. This is the social skills that we have in day-to-day life now. Whereas horses that are, you know, your average riding horse might get turned out in groups its whole life. And mm-hmm. so as it grows, it, you know, has more interactions with horses its own age. And a lot of people, a lot more riding horse people than racehorse people will turn out mixed herds. Not my favorite thing, because, again, a lot of the racehorses have not been turned out in a group with, you know, mixed mares and geldings. And some of the boys still behave very much like young colts, even after they've been gelded and their track life, because that's, you know, what they knew.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so fat. Like, honestly,
so
it makes me think of like child actors, like the Disney star horror stories a little bit. Like, they like worked too soon in their lives and they needed to get their childhood out once they retired.
But yeah, also, so like, that will, makes me feel better too. Because people are always offering me mares, and yeah. I'm like, all my horses live together, so I'm not comfortable just throwing a mare in to see what happens, because I have, you know, X racehorse geldings, and I just don't know what they're going to do, and I just don't want it to be a mess. So that helps. Yeah. Thank you.
And giving them time is good too. You know, people sometimes will panic because, you know, they get this horse home and, oh my gosh, it's so rowdy. Why is it playing so rowdy with all of my other horses? And it just needs help learning to grow and learning what its behaviors are supposed to be. So, like I said, sometimes having an older, wiser babysitter type horse that, you know, will tolerate only so much before putting it in its place can be helpful. Or also just being mindful. Like, I too have just lots and lots of racehorses. And so I have a group of thoroughbred geldings, and even the teenaged ones still play like they're babies. So they go out together. and then that way they don't harass the old curmudgeonly riding horse geldings.
Oh, that, I think that's super interesting. And I do think we need to do a two-part and like touch on the people side too, because I think they're people.
Yeah.
Be better, but I want to save and like dive deeper into that for a future episode for sure. But it's so interesting to hear you, like,
yeah,
And I think it also goes back to like, the thoroughbreds come off so young too. Like they're still babies a lot of times when they're retiring. And I think we forget it because they have that career background.
Right. And if you thought about, you know, a riding horse in the same capacity, sometimes you might not have even started your riding horse under saddle when you're getting this thoroughbred that's retired from the track.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Okay. So it wasn't all in my head that my horse, who tries to like very lovingly get all of her friends to gallop with her in the morning. And they're just like, what's wrong with you? And she just runs circles by herself. Like, isn't strange. Like that's totally normal actually. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, speaking of baby-like horses, we have a super cute adoptable horse that we're featuring today. Tell us more about Sunny Hill.
Yeah, so Sunny is a baby. He is a two-year-old. Well, he's a three-year-old now, I guess. Everybody's birthday is January 1st. So he, you know, fresh three-year-old. He did not race, just never really showed the desire to go fast enough to qualify, kind of disinterested in that whole life. And he's sort of a, you know, wander around and smell the flowers kind of guy even now. But he's absolutely darling. He has the best hair in the barn, beautiful ombre mane going on. And he is perfectly curious and intelligent. So he's a great, great horse for somebody that really wants to bring something along and really bond with it. You know, do all of that like ground up type work. We've been on him, you know, we've got him under saddle just a little bit, but we have not done a lot with him because of his age. So we're, you know, doing some in hand work as well, getting him used to poles and tarps and things like that. But just a cute little guy who's going to be a ton of fun for somebody. And because he didn't race, he has no limitations and just the sky is the limit. He's a little trotter. And just the cutest thing in the barn right now.
How rare is it that a standard bred is coming in this young?
I had a bunch this year. I got all the two-year-olds this year that didn't want to race. We have a really good group of donors that do, you know, recognize that sometimes they're just like, yeah, this is not the life for them. And so they'll go ahead and send them before they even race, or maybe they try to qualify them and they're just like, meh. So we do, you know, it's not the bulk of our standard bred horses, but I would say, especially, you know, as we get towards the end of the year, you know, I get the 2 year olds and maybe the 3 year olds that just don't seem like they want to do that job.
Gotcha. Well, I think it's definitely a unique experience and kind of a chance to bring a horse along the way you want to. And he seems to have a great personality. So he is available at newvocations.org. You do need to be an approved adopter. So get your applications in. He's super cute. You can tell he's just got a playful eye and he's a nice size too. He's 14.3 now, so he'll probably grow a little bit more. He seems slightly butt high in his photos. But it's always a good size to go any direction. So check him out. And he is $2,500. Like that is a good steal for a well-bred horse that you can take in any direction. Well, Bridget, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it and kicking off our year with such a fun horse. And we look forward to next time.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
You can find our show notes and links to today's guests on the website at horseradionetwork.com. Like us on Facebook and Instagram, just search for Retired Racehorse Radio. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. You can find me on Instagram at The Horseback Rider and on Facebook at Jobber Bill, Racehorse to Ranch Horse. My email is kristen@horseradionetwork.com.
You can find me on Instagram at Misfit Mare and my email is joy@horseradionetwork.com. Thanks to our sponsors, Kentucky Performance Products, Cashel Company, and Spalding Labs, and to our partners, New Vocations Racehorse Adoption Program and the Retired Racehorse Project. Don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network, part of Equine Network at horseradionetwork.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show as it really helps us grow. Remember to set your goals high and love to learn from every ride
and cow side leg.
Bye, guys.